Side 5, Dark Apprentice, The Jedi Academy Trilogy, Volume 2, by Kevin J. Anderson. Continuing on page 223. Kip swallowed hard at seeing the image of Exar Kun. "Who do you think he was?" Dorst 81 asked, squinting to stare across the water. Kip answered in a quiet, husky voice. "Someone very powerful." The great orange sphere of Yavin lurked on the horizon with only a fuzzy curve peeping over the tops of the jungle. The system's small sun would also be setting soon. The twin lights in the sky cast intersecting glitter paths across the still lake. Kip gestured toward the temple. "We can spend the night there if you'd like," he said. Dorsk 81 nodded with more eagerness than Kip had expected. "I would like to sleep inside shelter again," he said, "rather than up in a tree tangled in vines. But how are we going to get out there? How deep is the lake?" Kip went to the edge. The water was as transparent as diamond and so deep that it reflected the bottom like a lens, making it impossible to determine how far down the water went. Just below the surface, he saw columns of rock rising from the bottom like submerged stepping stones that stopped just barely beneath the water. Kip stepped out onto one. The clear water rippled around the bottom of his shoe. But he did not sink in. He took another step to the second stone. Dorsk 81 stared at him. Kip knew that he must appear to be walking directly across the surface of the water. "Are you using the Force?" Dorsk 81 said. Kip laughed. "No, I'm using stepping stones." Without hesitation, he splashed to the next stone and the next, eager to reach the temple, a source of new knowledge and secret techniques. On the island, he stepped onto mounds of pitted volcanic rock splotched with orange and green lichen that looked like droplets of alien blood. He could already feel the power. Kip turned to watch his companion pick his way across the lake. It looked very much as if Dorsk 81 balanced on the fragile membrane of the pool's surface. The illusion was very effective. Around him, silence blanketed the island as if none of the jungle creatures or insects dared to come near the empty temple. "It's cold here," Dorsk 81 said, shaking water off his feet and looking around. The smooth-skinned alien hunched his head closer to his shoulders. "You were complaining before about how hot it was," Kip said. "You should be grateful." Dorsk 81 clamped his lipless mouth shut and nodded once, but said nothing else. Kip walked around, looking at the polished black glass angles of the pyramid, the jutting point at the top. The architecture had been designed as an angular funnel to concentrate the Force, assembled to enhance the powers of Sith rituals. He stared up at the frozen statue of Exar Kun. The brooding Dark Lord looked so real to him, so awe-inspiring, that Kip expected the sculpture to bend down and grasp him. Kip knew now that the great temple was the focal point for the entire Masasi civilization that Exar Kun had built up from primitive decay. The great temple had been the headquarters, the prime focus of Kun's battles in the Sith War. But this small, isolated temple had been more of a private retreat, the place where Exar Kun had concentrated on improving his own abilities, strengthening himself. A cool wind breathed out of the wedge-shaped opening as if the silent temple were some kind of sleeping monster. "Let's go inside," Kip said. He ducked his head and took one step into the enfolding darkness. But when he blinked his eyes, the light gradually grew inside the chamber, as if lightning bolts trapped within the black slabs of glass continued to send faint sparks visible only from the corner of his eye. When Kip faced the polished, dark walls, he saw nothing in them, only faint etched markings of hieroglyphics in a long-forgotten language. He could not read any of the words. Deep green tendrils of moss grew like frozen biological flames that worked their way up the polished stones. Against one wall stood a smooth, rounded cistern filled with water. Kip stepped over to the cistern and dipped his fingers in, surprised and delighted to find the liquid cold and clean. He splashed his sweaty face, and then he drank, savoring the sweetness of the water as it slid down his throat. He sighed. Dorsk 81 stood just within the opening, looking out at the jungle beyond the lake. The sphere of Yavin had vanished below the treetops, and the sky began to thicken with purple twilight as the distant sun also set. "I'm very sleepy all of a sudden," he said. Kip frowned, but thought he knew what was happening. "You've traveled a long way today," he said. It's cool and dark in here. Why don't you sleep? The floor looks smooth and comfortable. You can curl up against the wall. As if hypnotized, Dorsk 81 shambled over to a corner and slithered down against the wall until he lay with his back pressed against the obsidian slab. He fell asleep almost before he had settled into place. Now you and I can continue in a more appropriate setting. The deep, loud voice echoed like distant thunder inside the chamber. Kip turned to see the hooded silhouette of Exar Kun like a black oil stain shimmering in the air. Kip stood tall, squashing a thrill of terror every time the ancient lord of the Sith spoke to him. Kip indicated Dorsk 81. Will he wake up? Will he see you? Exar Kun raised his shadowy arms. Not until we have finished, he said. All right. Kip squatted on the cool floor, tucking his robe around him as he found a comfortable position. He knew that his relaxed attitude might appear to be haughtiness or defiance of Exar Kun, but he didn't care. The ancient Sith Lord began to speak. Skywalker has taught you everything he knows. He makes excuses, but he can go no further because he has denied himself other options. He cannot grow as a Jedi by blocking out possibilities, by wearing blinders to what can be and what should be. Exar Kun loomed over Kip, hovering closer even though he didn't appear to have taken a step. You have already learned more than Skywalker will ever know, my student. Kip felt enthusiasm and pride burn through him, and he tensed his body, wanting to leap to his feet, but he restrained himself. Look at what I can show you today, Exar Kun said, gesturing toward the obsidian walls and the incomprehensible hieroglyphs barely visible, black lines against black volcanic glass. But as Kip looked at them, the words filled with white fire, standing out against the bottomless, opaque background until they burned into his eyes. And suddenly Kip could understand. The words snapped into focus and filled his mind, an incredible history from 4,000 years ago, telling how Exar Kun had begun to learn forbidden teachings, how he had come to the fourth moon of Yavin to find a lost Sith power object, and how he had enslaved the timid and weak Masasi people, making them build enormous temples for him as focal points for the dark forces he played with. The Brotherhood of the Sith could have ruled the galaxy, could have squashed the doddering Republic, and turned the other Jedi Knights into mere parlor magicians. But I was betrayed. The shadow of Exar Kun drifted about the floor of the temple, making no sound as he moved. He hovered over the sleeping and helpless form of Dorsk 81. When the Jedi combined their might and came here to this moon to fight me, they unleashed such power that I had to drain dry every last one of the Masasi just to trap my spirit within these temples, to survive so that one day I could come back. Kun's coal-black arms reached down as if to strangle Dorsk 81. The smooth-skinned clone stirred uneasily in his spellbound sleep, but he made no move to defend himself. With a thrill of fear and reluctance, Kip called out, Exar Kun, I'm the one you're trying to teach. Don't waste your time with him. He was enthralled by the new wonders Kun had shown him, but Kip was savvy enough to know when he was being manipulated. Exar Kun thought he was playing Kip like a mesmerized convert, but Kip was skeptical. Han Solo had taught him that much. He could play his own part, however, to get what he so desperately wanted. As Exar Kun turned back to face him, leaving Dorsk 81 unharmed, Kip spread wide his arms in complete acceptance of his new instructor. Teach me more about the ancient Sith ways. Kip swallowed, then made his voice strong, because this was what he really wanted. Tell me how to use these new powers, so I can crush the Empire once and for all. 21. On Coruscant, Chewbacca and 3PO took the twins through the sculpted Duracrete columns at the entrance to the holographic zoo of extinct animals. At home, the pestering children had rapidly worn down even 3PO's patience programming and had driven Chewbacca into a roaring frenzy. Getting Jason and Jaina outside seemed like a good idea for all concerned. The foursome took transit tubes across the upper skyscrapers in Old Imperial City to reach the rooftop levels of the holographic zoo. At the zoo's gaudy archway, Chewbacca let his furry arms dangle behind him. His huge paws engulfed the tiny hands of the children. Chewbacca took two sprawling strides forward, then waited for the twins to catch up before he took two more steps and waited again. 3PO scuttled ahead as if he were in charge. He had just undergone a deep oil bath so that his gold alloy plating gleamed in the artificial lights. They stepped under the grandiose arches. 3PO went to the cashier kiosk, punching in Han and Leia's credit code. Chewbacca, impatient with Jason's and Jaina's short legs, scooped up the twins, one in each arm, and strode forward. They endured a dull pre-show in an empty waiting room filled with chairs, cages, and sockets to accommodate the bodies of all alien visitors until the far doors automatically clicked open. Chewbacca, still carrying the twins, marched down a sloped tunnel to the lower levels. 3PO hurried after, trying to lead the way, but he could not get past the bulky Wookiee. Arcing glowing lights shot overhead, inept simulations of stars and comets and planets. As they passed motion sensors, booming godlike voices echoed in stereo from microspeakers in the walls. Journey down the corridors of time, travel the lanes of space. You will experience forgotten wonders from a long time ago and far, far away. You will see extinct creatures lost from our galaxy, but recreated here and now. The walls around them darkened. Streaks of light shot out, funneling down in a crude animation of star lines for a fake journey into hyperspace. The floor beneath their feet rumbled and vibrated in the simulation. The children were startled, but Chewbacca groaned at the corniness of it. The illusion ended, and the recorded voice spoke in a conspiratorial whisper. We have arrived at a universe of possibilities. They stood before a choice of several doorways. This way, children, this way, 3PO said, stepping forward. He had already scanned the data brochures about the exhibits, and after correlating them with the twins' interests, decided exactly which dioramas he would show them first. Let us go see the Mammoth Krabbocks of Calamari. As they stepped through the portal, holograms flared, surrounding them with a turbulent oceanscape, a jagged reef thrusting out from white foamy waters. Standing in a swirl of green and purple seaweed battered by the rushing waves stood a segmented crustacean, a ten-legged Krabbix with dual mandibles in its mouth, twin rows of spines down its back, and 18 glossy black eyes, four of which were on its front grasping claws. The Krabbix reared up and let out a bellow like a wampa ice creature set on fire. The twins watched as three green-skinned mermen thrashed out of the foaming waves, cocking jagged spears made of pale bone. The mermen hauled themselves onto the reef and attacked. The spears pierced the exoskeleton of the Krabbix, and the monster clipped at them with its pincers. It swung to the left and grabbed one of the mermen, slicing into his smooth green flesh and dragging him out of the water, where his fused finned legs thrashed like the tail of a fish. Let's go, Jaina said. Next one, Jason said. But children, I haven't told you the biological background of these creatures yet, 3PO said. Go now, Jaina insisted. They walked right through the surrounding illusion to the far wall, where several more openings presented themselves. Chewbacca urged the children through the left-hand door. Oh, not that one, Chewbacca, 3PO said. I'm not certain. But they had already entered the second chamber to be surrounded by the illusion of a desert planet. Waves of invisible heat rippled from a scabbed, dried clay surface. A strange creature scuttled atop a rocky outcropping with a blood-curdling roar. It had a squarish humanoid head and a massive feline body, huge curved claws, and a segmented tail that thrashed back and forth, capped with a wicked-looking scorpion stinger. As it opened its mouth to bellow again, cracked yellow fangs dripped with venom. A manticore? 3PO said in disbelief. Well, really, I'm astonished they haven't updated their display yet. That creature was proved to be a jumble of mismatched fossils long ago. Manticores never existed. Directly behind them in the hologram, another manticore echoed the bellowing challenge and climbed over the baked rocks. The twins tugged on Chewbacca's furry arms and headed through the non-existent creatures toward the next set of openings. Let me choose this time, children, 3PO said. Chewbacca groaned. The twins didn't seem to care. Go home, Jason said. Jaina nodded in agreement. I want to go home. But children, 3PO said, "I'm sure you'll enjoy this next one. Let me tell you all about the mournful singing fig trees of Pildiller." After three more dioramas and three more of 3PO's boring lectures, the twins decided that they would much rather play hide-and-seek than continue the tedious expedition through the holographic zoo. While they couldn't communicate telepathically with each other word for word, they did know in a clear but general way what the other was thinking. When Jason broke away from Chewbacca to run through the glacier eyries of the Snow Falcons, he headed to the left. At the same time, Jaina sprinted in the opposite direction, brushing past a startled 3PO. The twins used their fledgling talent with the Force to guide them into one of the other openings that led to an exit corridor. Chewbacca bellowed. 3PO called after the children, but Jason and Jaina met up outside the dioramas, pleased with their escape and giggling. They trotted down the white-tiled corridor as fast as they could go, past icons for refreshments, rest and recharge rooms, repair facilities. At an intersection of corridors, an old maintenance droid worked in an open turbolift. Jason and Jaina had seen turbolifts before. That was how they got back home once they reached the Imperial Palace. The maintenance droid was gunmetal gray with two heads and numerous mechanical arms, each studded with a handful of attachments. The droid's two heads faced each other. One head bore a set of bright optical sensors, while the other face was a blank screen that displayed data, statistics, and official Imperial building code specs. Muttering to itself in binary, the droid searched its back compartment for a particular tool, found it missing from its bin, then puttered down the corridor. It left the turbolift wide open with only a small dangling sign saying, "Out of service." The children ran for the turbolift and ducked inside. They had watched their parents and 3PO use the controls many times. The panel looked different from the one in the Imperial Palace, much less ornate, discolored with age and rough use, with a wall of buttons marking hundreds of different floors in the kilometer-high metropolis. Since the lower levels of the city had been abandoned and buried long ago, a thick metal plate had been welded onto the bottom half of the panel, sealing off the first 150 floors. But the maintenance droid had removed the barrier plate to check the turbolift circuits. The children barely knew their numbers, though 3PO had been trying to get them to recognize the primary numerals. The lessons frequently frustrated the protocol droid, but the twins were bright. They had picked up more than 3PO had realized. The rows of buttons looked like shiny, colorful circles to Jason and Jaina. They stared at them, not knowing which to push, but they did recognize some of the numbers.